Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion and Lamb Ministries. Welcome again to our program. This is the third episode of the program we're calling Escape, Survive, and Endure. We are talking about how the tribulation saints who are going to be in the midst of the great tribulation on the world, and how are they going to be delivered by the Lord. I showed you some verses where it says that there will be those that escape. The Bible talks about it. There are going to be those that survive. They're going to make it all the way to the end. In fact, the verses say they're going to see the coming of the Lord. They're the ones that are going to be alive when the resurrection takes place, and they will be raptured. They will be changed and go from mortal to immortal, right along with those that are resurrected, and they will see the coming of the Lord. And as we shared in the previous program, for those that still hold to the pre-trib rapture, you're not going to like this teaching or this program, because I'm talking about a whole lot of prophecies that talk about what the tribulation saints are going to be. And those that are looking at me right now through this program, if you live long enough and to those days when we see the abomination of desolation, these verses are talking about you. And for those of you who will be here and you were expecting the rapture, you desperately need to know what this is about so that you can be in this third destiny of those who escape, survive, and endure. There's two other previous destinies. That is to take up the sword and die by the sword, or to go into captivity. And I fear that many who are not prepared for this and don't know these prophecies, they will be taken captive. And the Lord specifically says their captivity will not be a long captivity. They will die within a 10-day period. They're asked to be faithful, remain faithful to the Lord in the midst of that. So I want to take you now. We have talked about the verses that specifically show you the phrase escaping and surviving. Let me take you to the next set of verses that talk about enduring. Malachi 3:2 says, "But who can endure the day of his coming? And who can stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire, like a launderer's soap." And Revelation 6, verse 17 asks the question, "For the great day of his wrath has come, who is able to stand?" That's the last verse in chapter 6. The first verse of chapter 7 answers the question. It says there's two groups. There's the 144,000. We're in other programs, we talk about them, but this program, we're talking about that second group, the one that can't be numbered from all nations, the tribulation saints. So we're not talking about, quote, a bunch of Jews. We're not talking about just Israel. We're talking about the saints from all over the world. By the way, we're talking about the saints that live today. And it says they're the ones that are going to make it all the way through. And one of the things they said about them, and I pointed this out in the last program to you, they are seen with palm branches. Why would the tribulation saints be holding palm branches when they see the Lord? Well, part of it has to do with this. If you understand the feasts of the Lord, from Passover all the way to the seventh feast is Sukkot, which is called the Feast of Tabernacles. And that Feast of Tabernacles feast, which comes in the fall after trumpets and the Day of Atonement, they use these branches to build a temporary shelter, which is called a sukkah. They build this little shelter, and they put branches on, leafy branches on it, to be a covering for it. And it's called a sukkah. And each year at the Feast of Tabernacles, they build this sukkah. And why do they do it? Because the commandment is, "You shall do that and dwell before me, the Lord, for 8 days with that, to remember how your ancestors dwelt in temporary booths and huts when they came out of Egypt and went through the wilderness." Now, why would he want future generations to remember that? I have an answer for you. Because the last generation is going to be doing that. We're going to escape and survive, leaving the cities, leaving where Babylon is at, going into the wilderness of the peoples, and we're going to be setting up temporary shelters. We're going to be setting up sukkah. And by us keeping the Feast of Tabernacles and building our sukkah, we're actually practicing each year on how to set up the camp, set up our temporary dwelling place to be able to dwell, and that's going to be the shelter that we use when we escape the world in the last 3.5 years. That's what the prophecy says. And so these tribulation saints are showing they have been participating in Sukkot, and they have the palm branches associated with it. Did you know that that's what is prophesied to happen at the end of the age? Did you know Moses prophesied this? Moses prophesied right at the end of his ministry. In fact, it was one of his last dissertations that he spoke, and it's in Deuteronomy chapter 30. And he's speaking to the last generation, and he says the following to him. So it will be when all these things have come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I've placed before you, and you call them to mind in all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you. Time out. Wait a minute. He obviously is talking about another generation, not the one that's standing there with him. The generation that's standing there with Moses is crossing the Jordan, going to go into the land. But he prophesied they would disobey the Lord. They would disobey the Lord to the extent that God would scatter them into all the nations of the world. Lo and behold, that is what we've seen in the history of Israel. Israel did disobey the Lord, and the northern kingdom was scattered by the Assyrians all throughout the world. Judah went to Babylon for a little bit, came back, still didn't obey the Lord. The Romans came and dispersed Judah throughout the world. It's only in this generation we've seen the house of Judah begin to return back, as the prophet said, back to the land. But there's still a whole bunch of Israel out there still scattered in the nations that have not yet come back. In Israel, they refer to this as the final redemption of Israel. They're looking for the day when B'nai Ephraim, the sons of Ephraim, the northern kingdom, will again return, as Ezekiel says, and they will be joined to the stick of Judah, and they'll become one in the hand of the Lord. That's a future redemption for Israel that's taking place. Now, we happen to live in the time where we see the house of Judah in the land, where the stage is set for the return, and we still have lots of saints scattered all over the world. A lot of Israel is scattered all over the world, intermingled with all the nations of the world. And so we have this plan of God for this final redemption to save his people in this time called the Great Tribulation. And part of that salvation is gathering up all of the saints from all over the world and bringing them back in another exodus. Listen to what Moses says further, Deuteronomy 30, verse 2. And you return to the Lord your God and obey him with all your heart and soul in accordance with everything that I'm commanding you today, you and your sons. Then the Lord your God will restore you from captivity and have compassion on you and will gather you again from all the peoples where the Lord your God has scattered you. If any of your scattered countrymen are in the ends of the earth, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will bring you back. The Lord your God will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed. You shall possess it. He will be good to you and make you more numerous than your fathers. Moreover, the Lord your God will circumcise your heart, the heart of your descendants, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and so that you may live. And the Lord your God will inflict all these curses on your enemies and on those who hate you, who persecuted you. So did you notice that last verse? When does this take place? When does God bring all these people back? It's at a time when God intends to judge the world. To judge the world is how they've treated Israel and how they've treated him. As we survey our immediate surroundings and the world that we live in, you would have to clearly say that the stage is set, that God, there's not much stopping God from having this happen. In fact, the only thing that we're really watching very closely is when do we think that Israel will get a chance to build that altar on the Temple Mount, get that daily sacrifice going, because that's a prerequisite. That has to happen before it can be shut down to fulfill the prophecy of the abomination of desolation. How soon do you think it could happen in the world that we live today that circumstances in the Middle East would change to where that Israel would be granted to have a piece of the Temple Mount and rebuild that altar? We know for a fact that the Jews have an interest in doing that. There are priests being trained to do the daily sacrifice. They've gathered the stones to rebuild the altar. It's a great controversy over the Temple Mount and who controls it in Jerusalem. It's part of the conflict in the Middle East. The present day conflict in the Middle East. Is it possible that in our generation that these events could unfold and we could have the start of the Great Tribulation? The answer from a reasonable person would be yes, that is possible. Now, how probable is it? Well, that's based on specific circumstance that we see. And we'll just have to continue to watch diligently the events in the Middle East, and in particular, what happens to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. But one of the things that this passage talks about that we can do now, it says that the people who are going to be gathered up and brought back, they themselves will have made a return to the teaching of Moses. They will have turned their hearts to obey the Lord in accordance with how Moses taught it. The modern messianic movement throughout the world today is the evidence of a people of God who believe in the Messiah, who are turning back to the commandments in the Torah, and they're learning to keep the feasts of the Lord. They're learning to keep Sabbath, learning to determine what is clean and unclean and eat the kosher, eat the fit and proper, to follow those commandments, and to keep the feasts of the Lord, you know, like Passover and like the Feast of Tabernacles. And they're learning while keeping the Feast of Tabernacles about this future redemption. And they're preparing their sukkahs so that when those events unfold, they're ready with their sukkah to go to the camps, to leave their homes, leave the cities where they're at, leave Babylon, and begin the journey of another exodus, a greater one than the one that was out of Egypt. That is where we're at today. So let me take you to Jeremiah, where he describes this incredible exodus. These people who escape, survive, and endure to the end. What is the journey they are on? Well, it's modeled after what happened when the children of Israel left Egypt. Let me take you to Jeremiah 1, chapter 16. At verse 14, it says, "Therefore, behold, days are coming, declares the Lord, when it will no longer be said, as the Lord lives who brought up the sons of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but as the Lord lives who brought up the sons of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands where he had banished them. For I will restore them to their own land, which I gave to their fathers." Now, when I say the word Exodus to you today, we're referring to the great Torah teaching of the Exodus out of Egypt. But there's a day coming, Jeremiah says, there's going to be another Exodus. And when we use the word Exodus, we'll be talking about when you and I get up and leave the cities and leave the countries where we're at, and we will begin a journey in the wilderness with the Lord to escape, survive, and endure to the end to see the coming of the Lord, who then will bring us back to the land and establish his kingdom. I know it sounds absolutely fantastic to some of you. This is like new words to many of you, but that's exactly what Jeremiah said. By the way, he repeats this. In Jeremiah chapter 23, he says the following, verse 7, "Therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when they will no longer say, as the Lord lives, who brought up the sons of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but as the Lord lives, who brought up and led the descendants of the household of Israel back from the northland and from all the countries where I had driven them, then they will live on their own soil." So Jeremiah makes reference to this twice about what's going to be really taking place. By the way, Jeremiah is also the prophet that prophesied to you the new covenant about how we would receive a covenant from God, not like the ones that our fathers received. It'll be slightly different. So the reference back to the Exodus, the reference back to Egypt, is something that Jeremiah uses extensively to explain the future things God's going to do. But let me take you where the Apostle Paul chimed in on this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul specifically makes reference to when God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, how they crossed the Red Sea, and about the different things that happened in the wilderness. They mumbled and grumbled, and they were disobedient. They didn't pay attention to the Lord. And he summarizes all of that teaching, that is about there in the Exodus by saying the following, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the end of the ages have come. In other words, the lessons that are in the wilderness and what took place, those lessons apply to us at the end of the ages. Because we're going to be on an exodus just like they were on an exodus. They were in the wilderness. We're going to be in the wilderness. And those lessons of what happened in the wilderness, they are for us. It's for our instruction and to help us to do it. Now, let's go back for just a few moments. And let's examine that exodus out of Egypt a little closer. Let's go back and see what other things we know about that exodus. And a fascinating place that most people don't refer to very often describes a lot about that exodus. It's in Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33 lists all the different camping places the children of Israel camped when they were on the wilderness journey, leaving Egypt, going to the promised land. I'm not going to go into the details of all the different things, but I can tell you this. The number of places they camped was 42 places. I want you to remember that number. Later on, Moses is going to instruct the children of Israel that when they get to the land, that the land is going to have 42 cities in the land and 6 cities of refuge. Let me take you to Numbers 35, verse 6. Let me give you the instruction. The cities which you shall give to the Levites shall be the 6 cities of refuge, which you shall provide for the one who commits manslaughter to flee to, and in addition to them you shall give 42 cities. The total number of cities which you are to give to the Levites shall be 48, together with their pastures and lands. Now, there is where Moses specifies the number of cities in Israel is 42, the number of cities of refuge is 6, the Levites will be in all of them. 42 turns out to be a very interesting number, because thematically, that's describing the Great Tribulation. If you go to Revelation, there's 2 places where we read, Revelation 11:2, leave out the courtyard, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, because it's been given to the nations and they will trample the holy city for 42 months. 42 months is the equivalent of approximately 3.5 years. And Revelation 13:5 says, a mouth was given to him speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him. That's a verse that talks about the Antichrist. And he will operate in the Great Tribulation. And he will have the power to operate for 42 months. You hear that number 42 again and again and again. So there's a theme number of 42 that's associated with the Great Tribulation, that's associated with this future judgment, and that comes out of the Exodus, where we get that. In particular, Yeshua, when he started the book of Revelation, he wrote 7 letters to the churches, 7 letters to the believers, preparing them for the Great Tribulation. Now, I don't know if you realize that, but all 7 letters apply to all of us. The Lord is trying to give you counsel in several different locations, several different issues and things that are going on today in the end days that need to get corrected so you can become an overcomer you can be one of the saints that escapes, survives, and endures to the end. Those are the overcomers. They overcome the days that they are in, and they're delivered, and they're called the overcomers. Now, in Revelation 2, this is what Yeshua has to say. Verse 10, and this one specifically deals with the people that have the destiny of captivity. You remember me sharing you those that are taken captive, the destiny of those saints? Okay, listen to what Yeshua said. Revelation 2:10, do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you in prison so that you will be tested, and you will have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a very encouraging note to you, but I would take note of the following. If you do get taken captive and you're in the Great Tribulation and you're one of the saints that is taken captive, you don't have to worry about starving to death. They will terminate you quickly and you'll be with the Lord. And he says to you, that's your test. That's the part you'll be tested with. And you need to be faithful for those 10 days, and then you'll receive the crown of life. You'll get to be with the Lord and have the gift of eternal life. But let's talk about those that are going to escape. What did he say in the letters that has to do with that group? Revelation 2, verse 17, he said this, the one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone and a new name written on the stone, which no one knows except the one who receives it. I want you to take note of something. Hidden manna. When was the last time that God's people got manna? That was in the wilderness when the children of Israel came out of Egypt. So when we come out of Babylon and we're in this great and terrible tribulation, God says, you're going to have manna too. That's how we will meet the extreme need for food. How do you feel about being in the Great Tribulation and eating manna again? Plus, he's got some other complimentary things he says he's going to help us with. I won't go into the detail of that, but the manna thing is a dead giveaway. It's modeled after the Egyptian Exodus. He also goes on to say this and through the prophet Isaiah. Here's another clue that ties back to the coming out of Egypt. Isaiah 4:2 says, on that day, the branch of the Lord, that's referring to the Messiah, will be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth will be the pride and beauty of the survivors of Israel. Again, we're using that word, the survivors. You know, those that come out of the Great Tribulation. And it will come about that the one who is left in Zion and remains behind in Jerusalem will be called holy. Everyone who's recorded for life in Jerusalem, the ones that make it all the way to Jerusalem and see the coming of the Lord, they will be called holy. Verse 4, and when the Lord had washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and purged the bloodshed of Jerusalem from her midst by the spirit of judgment and the spirit of burning, then the Lord will create over the entire area of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day and smoke and brightness of a flaming fire by night, for all over the glory will be a canopy. Did you hear what he just said? He said the various assemblies that will be in the Great Tribulation that will have tribulations. What he said was that there's going to be a pillar of a cloud and a fire by night that will be over the different assemblies of tribulation saints wherever they're at in the world. Well, that's what the children of Israel had. When they went into the wilderness, they had a pillar by cloud of day, a pillar by fire by night, and that's what led them all throughout the wilderness. And in the Great Tribulation, the assemblies that will be in the wilderness, they too will have manna, they will have water provided by the Lord, and they will have a pillar that will guide them as they go through that, besides the 144,000 and all the other blessings that he says that will be a part of it. In going back to Revelation 3, Again, back to the letters. Here's something else that the Lord said. Because you have kept my word of perseverance. And by the way, when he's referring to that, he's talking about the Torah. He's talking about the teaching of the Torah. I will also keep you from the hour of testing, the hour which is about to come upon the whole world to test them who live on the earth. You see, it turns out that the more you know about the Exodus from Egypt, the more you understand about what God did for his people there, the more you will understand about what God is going to do for you and how he's going to take care of you during the Great Tribulation. Now, I know there's a whole bunch of you that are going, oh my gosh, how in the world can that possibly happen? And especially a lot of you who've not spent a lot of time studying Torah, why, this is all foreign to you. But for those of us who are messianics, who teach the Torah and learn from the Torah, this literally is the book of life to us. And it's speaking to our situation in our day at the end of the ages. So how in the world is the Lord going to do this? What is the scenario that we're going to be going through? Now, rather than give you a bunch of verses, so I'm just going to speak plainly. I'm just going to share it straight out with you. So here's the scenario. We're going to have this abomination of desolation thing. This altar is going to be set up there in the temple, in the Temple Mount there in Jerusalem. And it's going to get shut down at some point. I believe it will be shut down in the winter months. The reason I say that is because Yeshua cautioned a group of people that was in Judea when they see that to flee, and they were to pray that their flight wouldn't be in winter or on Sabbath. So that's a dead giveaway clue. It's going to be in the season of winter. By the way, the return of the Lord, the parable of the fig tree, it says, you know, when you see the leaf come forth, do you not know summer is near? Well, the Great Tribulation is 3.5 years. So if you start in the season of winter at the start of Great Tribulation, then obviously it ends 3.5 years later in the season of summer. So the Lord actually told us the seasons, the starting season and the ending season of the Great Tribulation, winter to summer. By the way, that lines up with the biblical holidays, particularly at the end of the summer when we have trumpets, atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles at the end. That all lines up accordingly. So we have this winter season, and the abomination of desolation takes place. So everybody's in a dither. We now see that the prophecy of the start of the Great Tribulation has begun. The day count has begun. We're starting to tick off the 1,290 days of the Great Tribulation. That's what Daniel told us. And everybody's going, okay, when do we go? When do we go? Well, the answer is very simple. If you're going to go on the greater Exodus, when did the Exodus begin that was in Egypt? A Passover. So what's the first holiday in the springtime, first thing after that winter season of the shutting down of the altar? Passover. So you're going to, in those first days of springtime, you're going to keep the Passover. And as soon as you finish the Passover, you're going to load up during the days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which are called the Days of the Bread of Haste. And that's when you're going to leave. You're going to pack up your stuff, and you're going to head to the camp with your sukkah, and you're going to leave your house behind and everybody behind. You're going to leave Babylon behind, and you're going to go there. And you're going to go, the first camping place you're going to go to probably is going to go to the last place that you kept Sukkot. Because the first camping place of the Exodus was called Sukkot. The first camping place of all journeys back to the land is called Sukkot. And so you and I, as we make our first camping place on our journey back to the land of Israel, is going to be called Sukkot. And if you've been keeping the Feast of Tabernacles with like-minded brethren, you know exactly where to go. You know exactly who's going to be in the camp to receive you, and you'll be ready to go there. And you're going to go into those camps, and you'll be out of the cities, and you'll be in the wilderness of the peoples. All right. Now, why does God want to put us in the wilderness of the peoples? There's a couple of very simple reasons. One, the greatest danger in the Great Tribulation, where the judgments are falling, are in the major cities where there's lots of people. That's where the starvation is going to be taking place. That's where the violence will be taking place. That's where the wars will be taking place, in those locations, not out in the wilderness areas. And so it's a much safer environment for you to go into the wilderness during that time frame. But there's also another reason why it is, and it has to do with God's going to be training us. Quite honestly, we're not ready to go into the kingdom. We're a ragtag group. We're about as sophisticated as the slaves leaving Egypt. And we're like a mob right now. We grumble, mumble, grumble at each other. We're frustrated with each other. We say great things. We don't deliver very little. And he's going to take us in the wilderness, and there we're going to be trained by the Lord, and we're going to get cleaned up. Let me take you to Ezekiel chapter 20, and let me read to you what Ezekiel has to say about us going into the wilderness. Verse 33, "As I live, declares the Lord God, with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm and with wrath poured out, I assuredly will be king over you." I'm going to pour out judgments on the world. I'm going to prove to you I'm the king of the world. "I will bring you out from the peoples and gather you from the lands where you were scattered, and a mighty hand with an outstretched arm with wrath poured out." That phraseology is the exact phrase that God used when he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt. "I brought them out with great power and strength with an outstretched arm." And he's going to do the same thing with us. Verse 35, "And I will bring you into the wilderness of the peoples, and there I will enter into judgment with you face to face." Wow. "Just as I entered into judgment with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so I will enter into judgment with you, declares the Lord God. I will make you pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. And I will purge from you the rebels and those who revolt against me. I will bring them out of the land where they reside, and will not enter the land of Israel, so you will know that I am the Lord." There's going to be a time of judgment upon you and me. When you get into the wilderness of the peoples, and you're one of the trib saints, and you have your sukkah, we're getting ready to find out if you will obey the Lord. And if you decide to rebel in that camp, and you decide to not obey the Lord's going to be dealing with you face to face. Now, in the original Exodus out of Egypt, God only dealt with Moses face to face. And then Moses dealt with us. But this time God says, no, I'm going to deal with each one of you face to face. Part of the reason he can do that is because now, because of the new covenant, and because we have the Spirit of God inside of us, and the two tablets of our heart now have the law in it, and our commandments, he can deal with us face to face, just like we have the relationship with our Messiah. Obviously, we're going to need to learn to get along with one another. That means no mumbling, no grumbling, and we have to learn the lessons from the first Exodus. Now, in the first Exodus, they were concerned about food and water and protection. And God said that he would provide the water, the food, and protection, and he did. The only thing he doesn't say he provides for us in this one is our sukkah. They had to bring their sukkah. We have to bring our sukkah. Now, when the Lord comes back, and we've made it through that period of time, I want to take you to specifically, again, the words that Yeshua said when he described his return. Matthew 24 and verse 29. And let's re-examine when the Lord actually comes. "But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of heaven will be shaken, and then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. Then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory, and he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other." That's the day of the resurrection and the rapture. we're going to see the sign of man, the Son of Man coming. There's going to be a period of time. And then we'll hear the great trumpet. We'll hear the archangel sound. And that's when that resurrection rapture takes place. Let me tell you, though, in the last days of the Great Tribulation, in fact, in the last 5 months, is going to be a period of darkness. The world will know they're not going to survive. Literally, in that 5 months, which you call the final days of indignation, it's going to be devastating. You and I, though it says, according to the prophet Isaiah, you and I will have light. And there will be many people who come to the light that we will have. And there will be a great salvation that will take place. A great number of people will come to know the Lord at that moment. Let me read to you the very common verses that are shared by most of the Christians. You know, I told you, let's not talk about the rapture. Let's talk about, now let's talk about the rapture. Because now that we've got that stage set, that we're going to make it through the Great Tribulation, now we want the rapture. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 13, "But I do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about those who are asleep, so that you will not grieve, and indeed the rest of mankind do, who have no hope. For if we believe that Yeshua died and rose from the dead, so that God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep through Yeshua, for we say this to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will not precede those who have fallen asleep." Did you hear that phrase? Those who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord. The tribulation saints who make it, they will be there to see it. And they will see the resurrection. Verse 16, "For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, and with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of God. The dead and the Messiah will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain will be caught up together with those in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so we will always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words." We're going to speak to this in the final days of the Great Tribulation. When the darkness comes, we'll be saying, hang in there. Endure. Hang in there. As this darkness comes to a close, the Lord is going to come. 1 Corinthians 15:51. This is the other passage that a lot of pre-tribbers like to use. Let's talk about what it says. "Behold, I'm telling you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For this perishable must put on the imperishable, and the mortal must put on immortality." You want to know why you have to put on immortality? Because right after this event of being resurrection and rapture is the day of the Lord. God's judgment as a consuming fire is poured out on the earth, and every sinner is exterminated in the earth. Literally, God's going to kosher the earth with his blowtorch. So that when we come to rest on Jerusalem and see the Lord returning into Jerusalem, we're on a very clean place. We've been brought back and restored. So here's the counsel that I have for you, having gone through this program. Start obeying the Lord according to the Torah. Start learning about this Egyptian exodus. It's your future. Keep the Passover. Keep the Feast of the Lord. Keep Sukkot. Learn how to do this. Get your sukkah ready. Go out and practice with your family, going to the camp. Get with like-minded brethren, brethren that you can trust, that you can be in the camp with when these days come. Stop listening to false prophets and every ridiculous voice out there telling you all kinds of other nonsense. All the prophecies are right here in the Bible. That's the only ones you have to pay attention to. Ignore the others. Trust the Lord. And when you make the decision to go, don't look back. You're going to make a decision to live. You're going to escape, survive, and endure. You're going to be one of the tribulation saints. I want to remind you of some very interesting words that Yeshua said at this particular moment about this point. He said, "Remember Lot's wife." You know, when Lot escaped Sodom and Gomorrah and his wife looked back, what happened to her? So when we decide to escape, survive, and endure to the end, and you escape and you get out of there, and you head to the camp of the righteous, don't look back. Get going and proceed to God's deliverance and seeing the coming of the Lord. Amen. Shabbat shalom.